I think you know Domino's, you know, the pizza delivered right to your door, maybe a Friday night thing. But what if I told you that, well, beneath that cheesy crust lies a business far more complex, a titan, really, of data, logistics, and a financial model that's so unique it kind of defies conventional analysis. Today, we're taking a deep dive into the fascinating world of Domino's Pizza, Inc. We're not just looking at what they sell, but how they actually operate, how they earn, how they strategize on this, like, massive global scale. We've been handed this stack of comprehensive investment analysis, detailed financial reports, market insights, and our mission really is to cut through all that noise, extract the most important nuggets for you, and provide a true shortcut to being well-informed about this global giant.
That's exactly right. We'll be navigating through, you know, detailed company overviews, analyzing the critical industry trends shaping the whole quick service restaurant landscape.
Yeah.
We'll dissect their unique financial performance, uncover their bold strategic shifts, and even try to unravel the often misunderstood nuances of their distinctive capital structure. This isn't just about understanding a pizza company. It's really a masterclass in business resilience, strategic evolution, and frankly, how to build a truly formidable competitive advantage in a market that's changing incredibly fast.
Absolutely. We're going to unpack why Domino's isn't simply a quick service restaurant. It's just not the right label. Instead, it's far more accurately described as a vertically integrated supply chain operator and a sophisticated consumer marketing firm, all cleverly leveraging this capital light franchise system. And that perspective, it radically changes how you view their success and, well, their future. Here's where it gets really interesting. So let's begin by looking beyond just the slice, right? Let's get into Domino's core business model and what truly gives them their strategic edge globally.
Mm-hmm.
When you think Domino's, the immediate image is obviously pizza. And you'd be right. I mean, they hold the prestigious title, the world's largest pizza company by retail sales. That's huge. They're headquartered up in Ann Arbor, Michigan. But their reach is, well, it's truly global. They operate this absolutely vast network of stores. But, you know, simply calling them a pizza company, it feels like calling Amazon just a bookstore. It completely misses the sophisticated engine driving their operations.
Precisely. Yeah, the end product is undeniably pizza, but their true core identity, as you hinted, it's far more complex. They operate as this powerful, vertically integrated supply chain operator, controlling pretty much everything from dough production right through to distribution. And at the same time, they are a highly sophisticated consumer marketing firm, really adept at digital engagement and brand building. All of this is strategically layered onto a remarkably efficient capital-light franchise system. And this model, it isn't just a detail. It's absolutely critical to understanding, well, every aspect of their success and their unique financial structure. Their stated stewardship vision, by the way, is to feed the power of possible for communities, employees, the planet. It's a broad commitment that really underlines their self-perception as a company with significant impact beyond just food.
And when you're talking about scale, we're really talking about a global phenomenon here. By the end of fiscal year 2024, Domino's boasted nearly 21,400 stores worldwide. Just think about that number. To break it down, that's over 7,000 in the U.S. alone, and then more than 14,000 stores spread across an astonishing 90-plus international markets. It's a staggering footprint for any brand.
It really is.
And what's even more impressive is how long they've been building this global presence. Canada and Australia, for instance, they were among their very first international markets. They established a presence way back in 1983.
Mm-hmm, 1983.
So this wasn't some recent thing. They've been methodically expanding for decades, building the infrastructure and the expertise that underpins their current scale.
That decades-long commitment, that methodical expansion, building that vast footprint, it's absolutely foundational to what we call their multifaceted revenue engine. We sometimes think of it as a kind of self-reinforcing flywheel. This diversified approach to generating revenue, it's a strategic masterstroke, really, because it helps them significantly reduce the volatility that, you know, a purely restaurant-based model might experience. They're not just relying on individual store sales. They have multiple interconnected streams of income.
Okay, so how does this flywheel actually spin? Let's break down each component. It all starts with their U.S. company-owned stores. Now, for a company this size, you might actually be surprised to learn that these are a surprisingly small fraction of their total store count. They generated about, what, $393.9 million in revenue in 2024.
Right, relatively small.
But their real strategic function isn't just about direct sales to customers. You need to think of them more like living, breathing R&D labs.
Cool.
This is where Domino's rigorously tests everything. New menu items like that recently launched stuffed crust pizza, new operational procedures, delivery methods, cutting-edge technologies, all before they get rolled out to the entire franchise system. They're essentially their proving grounds, allowing for rapid innovation, continuous improvement, without risking the whole network.
Then you have the U.S. franchise royalties and fees. Now, this is arguably the core, the high-margin component of their business model. It's remarkably profitable. This is where they collect royalties, typically a percentage of retail sales, from their huge network of independent U.S. franchisees. This revenue stream is incredibly profitable, incredibly scalable, generated a substantial $638.2 million in 2024. The best way to think about this stream is that it's kind of annuity-like.
Annuity-like? Okay.
Yeah. What that means for you listening is that once a franchise agreement is in place, Domino's receives this highly predictable recurring revenue stream, and crucially, with very low incremental costs to maintain it. It's a beautifully efficient model because the franchisees, they bear most of the capital expenditure and the operational costs, while Domino's collects a reliable slice of their sales.
And what truly sets Domino's apart, what many consider their most critical pillar, and frankly, a truly formidable competitive advantage, is their supply chain segment. This is where that vertically integrated identity really shines. They operate this vast network of 22 dough manufacturing and supply chain centers here in the U.S. and another 5 up in Canada. But these aren't just facilities for making dough. They're highly sophisticated logistics hubs. They procure, manufacture, and distribute consistent, high-quality food, equipment, all the necessary supplies, to nearly all U.S. and Canadian franchise stores. This segment isn't just some cost center. It's their largest revenue segment. It pulled in a massive $2.846 billion in 2024.
Yeah, it's huge. And what's truly fascinating here is how this supply chain isn't just about revenue or distribution. It's a strategic weapon. The immense economies of scale they achieve allow Domino's to procure ingredients everything from flour to pepperoni. Though it's worth noting, they do rely on single or limited suppliers for key things like cheese, but they get them at significantly lower costs than independent pizzerias or even smaller chains could manage.
Right, that's scale advantage.
Exactly. And this cost advantage is crucial because it directly protects franchise margins. Even during aggressive national value campaigns or, you know, periods of high inflation. For example, in a recent high inflation year, despite input costs going up, Domino's managed to keep their price increases across the system to a modest 1.6%. That was purely due to the supply chain efficiency. This directly supports their renowned value strategy, keeping prices competitive while still maintaining franchise affordability. And of course, it ensures product consistency and quality across thousands of locations, which is just vital for brand integrity.
Then you've got the international franchise royalties and fees. This functions pretty similarly to the domestic side, but on a massive global scale. These revenues are based on master franchise agreements. These grant large regional partners the rights to operate and sub-franchise Domino's stores within specific regions. This segment generated $318.7 million in 2024, and it's a crucial engine for their overall growth, especially in high-growth markets like Asia-Pacific and Latin America. Pizza sales there are projected to grow like 1.4 times faster than the general restaurant industry, so huge potential.
Absolutely. It's a really powerful model, and they even have these major publicly traded partners. You mentioned Domino's Pizza Enterprises, DMP on the ASX operating in Australia, New Zealand, several European markets, and Jubilant Foodworks in India. It's a really interesting structure how they partner globally.
And we absolutely cannot overlook the U.S. franchise advertising contributions. This is, well, it's a brilliant funding mechanism. U.S. franchisees are required to contribute 6.0% of their retail sales to this thing called the National Advertising Fund, or DNF. These contributions are then recognized as revenue on Domino's books, and they bring in a substantial amount, $509.9 million in 2024.
Right. And that centralized fund is what powers their, quote, powerful national marketing campaigns. It gives them a budget that management themselves note is significantly larger than competitors. Think about their recent emergency pizza campaign, for example.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one.
Right. Promised free pizza for various emergencies like burnt dinners or power outages. These campaigns aren't just about brand building. They directly drive order counts. They get people talking and they bring new and, importantly, lapsed customers back into the Domino's ecosystem.
Okay, so let's truly unpack this then. Because what emerges here isn't just like a chain of events. It's a self-accelerating loop, a true self-reinforcing flywheel that creates this powerful competitive fortress. It seems incredibly difficult for others to replicate. It starts with store expansion, right?
Exactly.
As more stores open,
yeah,
it directly increases the volume flowing through that high-margin, super-efficient supply chain.
Exactly.
More volume in the supply chain means greater economies of scale, better cost absorption. Simultaneously, more stores contributing to that national advertising fund, the DNAF, create a larger, more impactful marketing war chest. This significantly larger budget gives them superior advertising firepower, allowing for these big national campaigns that drive higher order counts and strong same-store sales growth.
Hmm.
The resulting increase in sales and operational efficiency boosts franchise profitability. I think you mentioned a target of $170,000 in average unit EBITDA for 2024, up from $160,000 in 2023. And this increased franchise profitability, in turn, fuels demand from existing and new franchisees to open even more stores, thus completing and accelerating the whole cycle. Is that basically the secret sauce? Is that what makes them so tough to beat?
You really hit on the key point there. It's not just having these separate components. It's how they've engineered them to feed each other. It creates this almost unstoppable momentum. This virtuous cycle ensures that growth in one area directly contributes to the strength of another, making it incredibly challenging for any single competitor to disrupt or replicate the entire system. And underpinning a lot of this, acting as another really formidable competitive moat, is their relentless focus on technology.
Yeah, their embrace of technology is genuinely groundbreaking within the whole QSR space. Domino's was an absolute early adopter. They gained a significant first mover advantage by launching online and mobile ordering way, way back in 2007. Then they followed that up with the, well, pretty revolutionary Domino's Tracker in 2008. Remember that? Allowing customers to follow their order in real time from prep to delivery.
Oh, yeah. That was huge.
It put them years, maybe even a decade, ahead of much of the competition and fundamentally reshaped customer expectations for food delivery.
And their proprietary systems are certainly key here. They developed DomOS, their own robust point-of-sale system. It seamlessly integrates ordering, kitchen operations, delivery logistics, giving them granular data and control. Then there's their Anywhere suite, which lets customers order from this incredible array of devices and platforms, smartwatches, smart TVs, even to Twitter at one point.
Right, anywhere, literally.
Exactly. And the results of this tech investment, they speak volumes. Their digital sales mix in the U.S. just skyrocketed from just 11.5% back in 2008 to over 75% by 2021. This isn't just about convenience. It's about efficiency, data capture, and really owning that customer journey.
And they're clearly not resting on their laurels, are they? They've aggressively rolled out GPS tracking for all deliveries, giving customers real-time updates, optimizing routes for drivers. And what's even more forward-looking are these pilot programs for autonomous delivery vehicles. They're collaborating with partners like Ford. The idea here isn't just novelty. It's a strategic move to potentially alter the cost structure of delivery, reduce labor dependencies, maybe enhance speed and consistency. It's a testament to their continuous innovation, always looking for that next technological edge. Okay, now that we've kind of peeled back the layers of Domino's internal operations, understood what makes their engine hum, let's zoom out a bit and see how this pizza powerhouse navigates the broader quick service restaurant industry. It's a landscape that's constantly shifting beneath its crust, you could say. The global QSR market is enormous, valued at over $406 billion in 2024, and projections show a 5-6% annual growth rate, a compound annual growth rate, or CAGR. So it's a steady, reliable growth engine for the industry overall. Within that massive market, the U.S. QSR pizza category alone commands about $36 billion.
And this industry, it's currently being shaped by several powerful, interconnected trends that every player, Domino's included, has to deal with. First, pervasive digital transformation. It's not optional anymore. It's absolutely paramount. QSRs are investing heavily in tech like AI for predictive ordering, automation, kiosks, increasingly sophisticated mobile apps. It's a competitive necessity. Research shows something like 73% of consumers believe AI makes ordering easier and more efficient.
Wow, 73%.
Yeah. Second, there's a strong and persistent emphasis on value. Because of ongoing inflationary pressures, consumers are highly price conscious. They're shifting towards more affordable options, looking for perceived value. Third, menu diversification is absolutely key, driven by changing consumer tastes. There's growing demand for healthier options, plant-based alternatives, a broader array of global flavors, pushing brands to innovate beyond their traditional core stuff.
And finally, a colossal trend that's really reshaping the entire dining experience. The dominance of off-premise dining. Convenience just rules supreme today. Delivery, carryout, drive-thru. They continue to capture a growing, frankly massive share of sales. Something like 65% of consumers prefer these options over traditional dine-in. Within this, the pizza delivery market, while mature, it's far from stagnant. It's still growing globally, estimated somewhere between $150 and $173 billion. The U.S. segment alone is valued at $38.46 billion, growing at a steady 3.1% CAGR. This continued growth is mainly driven by convenience and the explosion of online ordering, which has surged over 300% in recent years. It's a market where Domino's has historically just crushed it.
Now, despite these broad, sometimes challenging trends, Domino's hasn't just maintained its market leadership. It's significantly strengthened it. They command nearly a quarter of the entire U.S. pizza market. That's truly dominant share. And what's even more telling is the widening performance gap between Domino's and its nearest competitors. In 2024, Domino's U.S. same-store sales growth, a key metric for retail health, was a positive 3.2%. Meanwhile, Papa John's saw a painful 4% decline, and Pizza Hut was down 3%.
Ouch.
Yeah, so this isn't just winning, it's like they're pulling away from the pack. Furthermore, through the first three quarters of 2024, Domino's U.S. retail sales grew by a robust 6.6%. The broader QSR pizza segment expanded by less than 2%.
And you can really see this dominance, this consolidation happening when you look at their store footprint. Between 2015 and 2023, Domino's added approximately 750 net new stores in the U.S. That's remarkable expansion. During that exact same period, its top QSR pizza competitors collectively closed nearly the same number of locations. That's a stark picture, isn't it? Market share being consolidated, driven directly by Domino's durable competitive advantages, their formidable moats, which just make it incredibly difficult for rivals to compete effectively.
These moats are indeed crucial to their sustained success. First, their brand and scale are immense. Domino's enjoys powerful, almost universal top-of-mind awareness globally, and that's amplified by that massive, centrally funded advertising budget, the DNF, that smaller chains simply cannot match, allows them to dominate the airwaves, digital spaces. Second, their logistics and supply chain, like we discussed. It provides significant, often unassailable cost advantages, ensures product consistency across thousands of locations, and critically protects franchise margins, making them more resilient to economic shocks. And third, their technology. Decades of strategic investment in proprietary platforms like DomOS, Domino's Tracker, have created this seamless, efficient, data-rich ordering and delivery ecosystem that's just incredibly hard for competitors to replicate overnight.
But for all this dominance, for all these powerful moats, Domino's faced this monumental strategic challenge that forced a major pivot. I'm talking about the aggregator conundrum.
Right.
Think about it. Historically, if you wanted food delivered, your options were pretty limited, right? Probably pizza or Chinese. Now, third-party aggregators like DoorDash, Uber Eats, Grubhub, they offer delivery from almost the entire restaurant industry.
Mm-hmm.
It creates this unprecedented competition for what analysts call share of stomach.
And this is a really multifaceted, complex threat. On one hand, aggregators charge high commission fees, often ranging from 15% to 30% of the order value. That can severely erode restaurant profit margins. But maybe even more strategically significant, the aggregator, not the restaurant, typically owns the primary customer relationship. They control valuable ordering data, and they manage the entire last-mile delivery experience. This disintermediation, this cutting out of the direct customer relationship, was something Domino's famously resisted for years.
Oh, yeah, they held out for a long time.
They really did. They held firm on their stance to protect their vertically integrated model, their direct access to customer data, and their, well, uncompromising control over delivery quality. It was a fiercely defended part of their competitive advantage.
And this is where the landmark pivot comes in. A monumental reversal for Domino's. Despite all their formidable in-house delivery strength, they finally partnered with Uber Eats. This move, while still relatively new, was already contributing about 2.7% of their sales by Q3 2024. And they've also signaled intent to potentially join other platforms down the road. This is a massive strategic shift. It really begs the question, why? Why did Domino's, with its formidable in-house delivery moat, finally make this pivot? Was it a sign of weakness or maybe a brilliant strategic adaptation? What do you think was the ultimate tipping point for them?
It was, I would argue, less a sign of weakness and more. Well, maybe their hand was forced, but it could potentially be a brilliant move in hindsight. The tipping point probably wasn't just losing some customers to aggregator convenience. It was likely the realization that aggregators were rapidly becoming the new digital storefront for all food. If you weren't listed on these platforms, you simply ceased to exist for a whole and growing segment of potential customers, the ones who now started their food search on DoorDash, not directly on a restaurant's app.
Ah, okay. So it's about visibility on that new storefront.
Exactly. It was less about giving up their direct delivery moat and more about extending their reach into new waters, even if those waters came with a toll, you know, the commission fees. It's a tacit admission that their competitive moat is no longer just about delivering pizza, but about competing in the entire food delivered to your door market. While Domino's is clearly dominant and continues to take share from its direct pizza rivals, this strategic shift highlights a defensive yet also aggressive posture against a much broader competitive set. It suggests the convenience of these platforms offering this vast ecosystem of restaurants just became too powerful to ignore.
The implications of this pivot are absolutely huge then. Management sees this as a potential $1 billion incremental sales opportunity. That's massive for a company of Domino's size. But, as you pointed out, it also introduces significant new variable costs, those commission fees, which can definitely eat into margins. And like you said, it cedes a degree of control over the customer relationship, which was such a core advantage for them. It's a truly calculated risk, balancing those immediate sales gains against potential long-term strategic shifts.
And this strategic crossroads kind of leads us to what some analysts call the tale of two companies within Domino's itself. On one hand, you have the U.S. pizza market. It's a mature segment, growing at a modest 3% CAGR. For Domino's, growth here is primarily about taking market share from weaker competitors, consolidating their already dominant position. It's a stable, highly cash-generating engine that funds much of their operations and shareholder returns.
The cash cow, basically.
Pretty much. In stark contrast, you have their international markets, particularly in rapidly developing regions like Asia-Pacific and Latin America. These are projected to grow much faster. This international segment is the primary driver of their long-term unit growth and overall top-line expansion.
So while the U.S. segment acts as the reliable cash cow, providing stability and funding, the international segment is the exciting, albeit maybe more volatile, growth engine. But this split, this bifurcation, introduces specific risk, doesn't it? Any significant geopolitical instability, economic slowdowns, or adverse currency fluctuations in key international growth markets, that could disproportionately impact the company's consolidated growth narrative, even if the U.S. business stays solid. It's a delicate balancing act, relying on diverse global conditions to fuel their overall expansion. Okay, now let's transition from strategy to the very heart of how Domino's maintains its dominance, its financial engine. We're going to delve into their impressive profitability, their consistent cash flow generation, and what many consider their truly unique, maybe even aggressive, approach to leverage. When you really scrutinize their financial history, what you uncover is a company with just a remarkable track record of consistent growth and impressive financial strength.
Absolutely. I mean, they achieved an extraordinary 39 consecutive quarters of positive U.S. same-store sales growth through the end of 2020. That's nearly a decade of uninterrupted comparable sales increases, just incredible resilience and execution, especially in a mature market. And that's been combined with incredibly aggressive global unit expansion. They added, 624 net new units in 2020, then ramped it up further to 775 in 2024, steadily increasing their total revenues year after year. This dual engine growth from both existing stores and new locations has really fueled their financial ascent.
And it's not just about that top-line growth either. Their business model, particularly that capital-light franchise system, is exceptionally profitable. In fiscal year 2024, they reported income from operations of $879.0 million. That's a robust 7.3% increase year over year. Their net income stood at $584.2 million, an impressive 12.5% increase. The U.S. and international franchise segments with those high-margin royalty streams are the absolute primary drivers of this operating income. They generate revenue with very little direct operational overhead.
Right. And the supply chain segment, while operating on lower gross margins around 11.1% in 2024, compared to company-owned store gross margins of 16.7%, it contributes a truly substantial amount of absolute profit dollars just due to its sheer scale and massive revenue base. It's a volume game there, and they play it very, very well. The overall operating margin has consistently shown historical strength, profoundly reflecting those favorable economics of their franchise-heavy model, where franchisees absorb most of the capital expenditures and the day-to-day operating costs.
Okay, here's where it gets truly fascinating and maybe a bit counterintuitive for some people listening. Let's talk about their exceptional capital returns, which are built on what we're calling their leveraged playbook.
Yeah.
Their return on capital employed, or ROCE, for 2024 was an absolutely extraordinary 146.65%.
Yeah. I mean, for most businesses, a number like that would seem impossible, right? Almost like a typo. But it's a prime example of why this specific metric, ROCE, for a franchise model like Domino's, needs really careful interpretation. It underscores the extreme capital efficiency of their model. Because the franchisees bear most of the significant capital costs, things like building out and equipping a new store, this makes the denominator in the ROCE calculation, their actual capital employed, unusually low. While the numerator, their earnings before interest and taxes, or EBIT, derived from those high-margin royalties and supply chain profits, is very large. So it highlights that Domino's doesn't own most of the physical assets, yet they generate significant earnings from the entire system. It's just not directly comparable to asset-heavy businesses.
And speaking of figures that might raise an eyebrow, let's address their persistent negative total equity. It stood at nearly negative $4 billion at the end of 2024. Now, if you were to just look at their balance sheet and see negative shareholder equity, your first thought might be, oh, financial distress. It sounds alarming, doesn't it? Most people would see that and think, this company is in deep trouble. What does this actually mean for Domino's?
It's absolutely crucial to understand that for Domino's, this isn't a sign of distress at all, not in the typical sense. Instead, it's a direct and deliberate outcome of what's called their leveraged recapitalization strategy. Think of it like this. Imagine a homeowner who keeps taking out new responsible mortgages on their house. Not because they're struggling to pay the bills, but because they're using that borrowed money to constantly buy back more of their own property or invest elsewhere. Domino's systematically swaps equity for debt. What that means in practice is they issue large tranches of new debt, then they use those proceeds to fund massive share repurchase programs, essentially buying back their own stock from the market, and also to pay out special dividends to shareholders.
Okay, so they're borrowing to buy back stock and pay dividends.
Exactly. And this aggressive strategy is only viable, only truly safe for them because of their incredibly stable and predictable cash flows. Those reliable royalties, the resilient supply chain, that's what makes it possible. They are essentially borrowing money against those guaranteed future cash flows to aggressively return capital to shareholders. And doing that reduces their equity on the balance sheet, often pushing it into negative territory. It's a very aggressive approach, but for a business with such predictable and robust cash flow, it's often an effective way to boost shareholder returns per share.
And the lifeblood, the very engine of that highly leveraged strategy must be their prolific cash flow generation. Domino's is a remarkably strong and consistent generator of free cash flow. That's the cash left after paying for operations and capital expenditures. In 2024, they generated $512.0 million in free cash flow, a healthy 5.5% increase from the previous year. And it surged even more dramatically to $331.7 million in just the first half of fiscal 2025. That was up an impressive 43.9% year over year, largely due to favorable changes in working capital. This robust and predictable free cash flow is truly the lifeblood of their entire capital allocation strategy. It funds everything from debt service to those massive share buybacks.
Yes, exactly. And this leads directly into their aggressive capital structure and the significant debt they carry. Domino's deliberately employs a highly leveraged capital structure, meaning they use a lot of debt relative to their equity. They have a long and consistent history of these recapitalization transactions, consistently issuing new debt and using the proceeds primarily for those share repurchases and special dividends. As of the end of fiscal year 2024, they carried approximately $4.98 billion in total debt. That's billion with a B. Their leverage ratio, measured as total debt to EBITDA, stood at 4.9x. That was actually an improvement from 5.2x in 2023. Now, this is a level that might seriously concern investors in other industries, but for Domino's, it's a chosen, deliberate strategy.
The consequence, as we've highlighted, is that significant negative shareholder equity. But again, it's not necessarily a sign of fundamental distress. It's the direct outcome of this specific financial strategy. For you, the listener, thinking about investment, this means that an investment in DPZ, the ticker symbol, is intrinsically tied to a belief in this unique leveraged return model. High debt, by its very nature, amplifies things. It amplifies returns in good times, when profits per share are boosted by having fewer shares outstanding, but it also amplifies risks in bad times, when the burden of interest payments becomes heavier.
And that's precisely the key risk here. While this strategy can be incredibly effective in strong economic conditions, an unexpected and severe economic shock that significantly impacts franchise health and profitability, or maybe a dramatic spike in interest rates when they need to refinance, that could quickly make the substantial debt load a significant burden. Their model prioritizes capital efficiency and maximizing shareholder returns over maintaining a more, let's say, conservative financial buffer. It's a finely tuned but aggressively leveraged financial machine that really requires consistent, strong performance to manage effectively.
All right, let's turn our attention now to the Hungry for More strategy and Domino's future trajectories, especially after navigating some pretty significant post-pandemic headwinds that challenged the entire quick service industry. The period from, say, 2022 to 2024 was certainly a test for many restaurant businesses, and Domino's wasn't immune.
Indeed. They faced a confluence of pressures, persistent labor shortages, making staffing difficult. Significant wage inflation across the country, a prime example being California's Assembly Bill 1228, which mandated a substantial minimum wage increase for fast food workers. You add to that volatile commodity costs, with cheese alone a core ingredient, accounting for roughly 25% of the food basket cost for a typical store. But despite these formidable pressures, the company demonstrated considerable resilience. They even improved gross margins in Q4 2024 for both their company-owned stores and the supply chain, which indicates highly effective cost management strategies were working.
And in direct response to these evolving market dynamics and challenges, Domino's unveiled their new strategic vision in 2024, aptly named Hungry for More. It's a comprehensive plan built on four core pillars: more food, more good, more value, and more stores. The cornerstone, and perhaps the most widely discussed aspect, was that landmark reversal, changing their long-held policy of shunning third-party aggregators, leading to the Uber Eats partnership.
Yes, that partnership with Uber Eats is a direct manifestation of this strategy, and it's already showing significant traction, contributing about 2.7% of their sales by Q3 2024. Management views this as a truly significant growth driver, potentially becoming a $1 billion incremental sales business for Domino's, especially if they expand successfully to all the major aggregator platforms. This is really their offensive move to fight fire with fire against the broader food delivery ecosystem. It's recognizing that a segment of customers simply prefers the convenience of ordering all their food from a single aggregator app.
Beyond that pivotal aggregator decision, technology and digital initiatives are absolutely central to the Hungry for More strategy. They relaunched and significantly enhanced the Domino's Rewards loyalty program, made it easier and faster for customers to earn and redeem points, which is key for driving repeat business. Management has even cited this revitalized program as a primary driver for their recent return to positive U.S. order count growth. It seems particularly successful in attracting what they call light users, customers who don't order as frequently, and also drawing in more profitable carryout customers.
And international growth also continues to be an extremely important focus, particularly as that long-term unit expansion driver. Fiscal 2024 marked their 31st consecutive year of positive international same-store sales growth. That's an incredible streak. However, we have observed some signs of slowing growth in certain key international markets recently. And naturally, foreign currency fluctuations can certainly impact reported results, introducing an element of volatility there.
Despite those currency headwinds and maybe some localized challenges, global expansion clearly remains a top priority. They opened a net of 775 new stores in 2024 and celebrated a significant milestone, opening their 7,000th U.S. store. And a critical component of this continued growth, and perhaps an underappreciated competitive advantage, is the robust health of their franchise system and the unique internal pipeline for new operators.
This internal development system is, I think, a profound and often underappreciated competitive advantage for Domino's. It ensures that new operators are deeply steeped in the company's culture and operational best practices. That fosters remarkable consistency and significantly reduces operational risk. Domino's places a huge emphasis on improving franchisee profitability. That target average U.S. franchise EBITDA exceeding $170,000 in 2024, up from $160,000. This financial health directly incentivizes growth. What's truly unique is that they have this pipeline of 120 future franchisees, all of whom started within the Domino's system itself, often as delivery drivers or store managers.
Wow, homegrown talent.
Exactly. This homegrown approach means new operators understand the system from day one. It fosters continuity, loyalty, and this powerful meritocratic culture that rewards internal talent.
In terms of management and governance, the leadership team is currently led by CEO Russell Weiner, who took the helm back in May 2022. He's a long-tenured veteran, been with the company since 2008, and he's widely credited as one of the key architects of that famous pizza turnaround campaign that completely reshaped the brand's perception and financial trajectory years ago. The executive team generally strikes a balance between deep institutional knowledge and some fresh perspectives, with an average tenure of about 3.2 years.
The promotion of insiders, like Joseph Jordan moving up to Chief Operations Officer, certainly reinforces their strong, internally focused culture. Now,
looking ahead then, there are clear growth opportunities and strategic initiatives that Domino's is aggressively pursuing. Domestically, they're targeting an ambitious 7,700 U.S. restaurants by 2028. That's up significantly from 7,000 in 2024. A key strategy here is what they call fortressing. Now, this isn't just about throwing more stores into a market. It's a calculated move. Adding new stores in existing dense markets to reduce delivery times, aiming for mere minutes, significantly improves service quality and increase carryout convenience. Imagine getting a hot pizza in under 15 minutes because there's a Domino's just around the corner. But this also comes with that inherent risk of sales cannibalization, right? Where new stores might eat into the sales of existing ones nearby. How do they manage that tightrope?
That's a crucial point, and it's managed through really careful site selection analysis, ensuring the new stores primarily capture incremental demand, reduce those delivery radii effectively, and enhance the overall brand presence rather than just stealing sales. Internationally, the opportunity for unit growth is even larger. Their updated guidance calls for an impressive 800 to 850 net global store openings annually. Markets in Asia and Latin America are particularly underpenetrated, meaning there's just massive white space for new stores. They represent the primary engine for long-term expansion, given their large populations and growing middle classes.
Menu innovation is another powerful lever they continue to pull effectively. Domino's has a long-storied history of successful new product launches, hand-tossed, handmade pan pizza, wings, breadsticks. Recently, they've launched mac and cheese pasta bowls, and notably that Parmesan stuffed crust pizza. Management described that one as arguably the biggest new menu item in our history. Big claim.
It is a big claim.
These innovations aren't just about exciting customers. They drive traffic, increase average order value, keep the brand feeling fresh. There's also potential, maybe, to expand more aggressively into adjacent food categories, like chicken, to combat any perceived stagnation in the core pizza market and capture a broader share of customers' food budgets.
And technology, of course, continues to be a core focus. They're leveraging their vast troves of data from digital ordering to personalize marketing campaigns, optimize promotional offers for individual customers, and continuously improve operational efficiency, from kitchen flow to delivery routes. Looking further ahead, they're actively exploring truly futuristic opportunities like robotics and pizza making. That could streamline preparation, improve consistency, and as we mentioned, autonomous delivery vehicles. These innovations aren't just for PR. They have the potential to fundamentally alter their cost structure, reducing labor costs, improving delivery efficiency, which is a potential game changer in the QSR space.
And this brings us to an incredibly interesting strategic tension they're navigating right now. Their longstanding focus on carryout versus their new partnership with aggregators. Carryout has emerged as a significant and highly profitable growth driver for Domino's. It boasted an impressive 5.4% same-store sales growth in Q3 2024. This channel was so attractive because it eliminates the most expensive part of the transaction, that last-mile delivery cost. They've even got Domino's Carside Delivery, offering contactless service where they bring the order right to your car. This success in carryout opens up the strategic possibility of developing smaller, more capital-efficient store formats, primarily focused on carryout, reducing overhead and maximizing profitability.
This is a truly fascinating strategic tension, and it's critical to understand the economics here. Carryout is highly profitable precisely because it eliminates the most expensive part of the transaction, last-mile delivery, including driver wages, fuel, vehicle maintenance, all that. The aggregator partnership, while boosting delivery sales and reaching new customers, comes with those margin-pressuring commission fees we talked about. Both strategies aim for growth, but they target different customer occasions and have vastly different profitability profiles. The core challenge for management will be to carefully manage its marketing and promotional activities to optimize the mix between these two channels. Success will likely hinge on effectively segmenting customers, using tools like the revamped loyalty program to drive traffic to the more profitable direct and carryout channels, while leveraging aggregators primarily to acquire new, incremental customers who prioritize delivery convenience above all else, rather than just cannibalizing existing direct orders. It's a delicate balance.
Let's move on now to valuation, which often presents a bit of an investor's dilemma with a company as unique as Domino's. The stock consistently trades at a premium compared to many of its peers. That reflects its high-quality, incredibly cash-generative business model. But the market has to constantly balance that perceived quality and resilience against the inherent maturity of the domestic market and those rapidly evolving competitive threats, particularly from aggregators.
Looking at common trading multiples, Domino's definitely commands a premium valuation. One analysis from mid-2025 placed their trailing price-to-earnings, or P-E, ratio at 33.8x. That's slightly above their five-year average of 32.5x. Now, this is significantly higher than a direct competitor like Papa John's, which sits around 15.2x, although Domino's trades at a discount to high-growth, asset-light, premium-margin players like Chipotle, which commands a PE of around 40.2x. Another source cites a PE closer to 28x. On an enterprise value to EBITDA or EBITDA basis, it's around 21.8x. This premium signals that the market is clearly pricing in continued market share gains, successful international expansion, and a strong belief in the efficacy of their new Hungry for More strategy.
Now, when we look at discounted cash flow, or DCF analysis, which tries to estimate the intrinsic value based on future cash flows, the range of fair value estimates is truly striking. Some models, using a two-stage free cash flow to equity framework, with discount rates typically between 8.1% and 8.6%, and terminal growth rates of 2.4% to 2.9%, they suggest a fair value somewhere around $487 to $498 per share. That implies it's trading at or near its intrinsic value currently.
Yeah.
But then you see other models that arrive at radically different conclusions. Alpha Spread, for instance, calculates a DCF value of just $322.03 per share, implying it's more than 30% overvalued. And the acquirer's multiple, using a higher 10% discount rate and a more conservative 3% terminal growth, arrives at an even more conservative $87.99 per share.
Wow.
Yeah. The sheer range of these DCF valuations from almost $500 down to less than $100, it's striking. Why such a massive divergence? What's going on here?
Yeah.
This is perhaps the most critical insight for any investor considering Domino's. It really reveals something fundamental. The investment case for Domino's is less about finding a single, objectively correct calculation, and almost entirely dependent on an investor's subjective view of its long-term growth prospects and its fundamental risk profile. A bullish investor, for instance, might assume Domino's will continue its strong international growth, that its moats will withstand aggregator pressures, that its cash flows are incredibly stable, and that leads them to use a lower discount rate and a higher terminal growth rate in their model. Conversely, a bearish investor might view the high leverage as a significant risk, believe the aggregator threat will fundamentally erode their direct-to-consumer advantage and pricing power, maybe anticipate a deceleration in international expansion due to headwinds, leading them to apply a much higher discount rate and a lower terminal growth rate. So you can't just calculate the value. You must first form a strong qualitative thesis about the future of the business. And that thesis will then inform the quantitative inputs you select for your valuation model. The numbers are really a reflection of your underlying assumptions about the business's future.
That truly clarifies the core of the dilemma. It sounds like the valuation isn't about finding the number, but about aligning with a specific investment philosophy and a clear qualitative story about the company. Another interesting approach for Domino's, precisely because of its diverse operations, is a sum-of-the-parts, or SOTP, valuation. This method seems particularly well-suited for Domino's because it operates as several distinct business segments under one roof, each with different risk profiles and growth characteristics.
Exactly. An SOTP analysis would involve valuing each segment separately to arrive at a total enterprise value. For example, you'd value the U.S. and international franchise segments as those high-margin, capital-light royalty streams. You could value these almost like an intellectual property company, which would typically command a premium multiple due to their asset-light, high-margin, recurring revenue nature. Then you'd value the supply chain segment as a food distribution and logistics business. That would typically get lower multiples, maybe based on an EBITDA metric, given its more operational, somewhat asset-heavier nature. Finally, the relatively small segment of company-owned stores would be valued as a traditional restaurant operator, perhaps on a multiple of sales or EBITDA. Summing these individual enterprise values for each segment and then subtracting net debt would give you the total equity value of the company. This approach could potentially reveal hidden value by properly appreciating the different margin and growth profiles of each unit, rather than just applying a single blended multiple to the entire enterprise.
Ultimately, the premium valuation Domino's consistently commands reflects its high-quality business characteristics. You can't deny that. It's got exceptionally high returns on capital, a powerful global brand, that track record of consistent market share gains, robust free cash flow. For a bullish investor, these qualitative factors absolutely justify that premium. But the bearish view is that the valuation doesn't adequately discount the risks of a potentially stagnant core pizza market and that profound structural aggregator threat we discussed, which could fundamentally alter their business model over the long term. It's a deep debate with compelling arguments on both sides. Okay, let's turn now to navigating the headwinds, the significant risks, and the key metrics you, as an informed listener, should probably be monitoring to stay on top of Domino's performance. While Domino's is undeniably a powerhouse, It operates in a dynamic environment and faces significant risk factors across several critical areas.
The first, and perhaps most fundamental, are the franchise model risks. You have to remember, Domino's success is inextricably linked to the financial health, the operational execution, and the brand stewardship of its thousands of independent franchisees. A widespread decline in franchise profitability, for example, could directly reduce the royalties they pay to Domino's. It could impact their willingness or ability to invest in store remodels or their demand to open new locations, which slows that flywheel. And any widespread actions by franchisees inconsistent with company standards, whether related to food safety, customer service, brand image, could severely harm the entire brand's reputation. Maintaining that positive, collaborative relationship with thousands of independent operators is absolutely paramount.
Then there are macroeconomic and cost risks, which are just a constant pressure in the restaurant industry. Labor inflation and availability are persistent challenges, exacerbated by new regulations like California's AB 1228, which significantly increase fast food wages, adding substantial costs. We also have commodity price volatility, especially with cheese, as we noted, making up about 25% of their food basket cost. Significant price spikes can directly impact their supply chain margins and, by extension, franchise profitability. And, of course, consumer spending sensitivity. Pizza, while often seen as affordable, is still a discretionary purchase. So economic downturns, high inflation, a squeeze on household budgets, that could lead to reduced spending on food away from home.
Competitively and strategically, the QSR pizza market itself is intensely competitive. But the real evolving threat now comes from the entire broader food delivery ecosystem. The aggregator dependency we discussed is a classic double-edged sword. While it offers incremental sales, it introduces margin erosion due to those high commissions. And, more critically, the potential loss of that direct customer relationship and valuable first-party data. There's also the increasing threat of new entrants like ghost kitchens and virtual brands, which leverage third-party delivery and often operate with much lower overhead. These models significantly lower the barriers to entry in food delivery, increasing competitive intensity across the board. And if we connect this back to the bigger picture, maybe the single greatest long-term strategic risk facing Domino's is the structural erosion of its direct-to-consumer moat by these powerful third-party aggregators. Historically, Domino's controlled that entire customer journey, ordering on their app, capturing valuable customer data, their own drivers making the delivery. Aggregators systematically disintermediate this. They break that direct link. They own the digital storefront where the customer initiates the order, they capture the customer data, and they often control the last-mile delivery experience. While the Uber Eats partnership provides an immediate sales boost, it also trains customers to use the aggregator's platform instead of the Domino's app. That potentially dilutes brand loyalty over the long term and diminishes their pricing power if they become just another tile on an aggregator's app. This is a classic devil's bargain, trading immediate sales gains for potential long-term strategic erosion of a core competitive advantage.
Beyond the strategic, there are also important operational and regulatory risks to consider. Their highly efficient centralized supply chain, while a massive strength, could paradoxically be a single point of failure. If there's a prolonged disruption at one of their dough manufacturing or supply centers due to, say, a natural disaster or a large-scale equipment failure, that could be a big problem. Food safety is always paramount. Any widespread issue could cause immense brand damage and legal liabilities. Cybersecurity is another constant concern, given their massive digital footprint and all the customer data they handle. And of course, navigating international risks from foreign currency fluctuations impacting reported profits to geopolitical instability in key growth markets and varying local regulations adds layers of complexity.
And finally, the financial risks, primarily stemming from that aggressive capital structure we talked about. Their high leverage, with nearly $5 billion in debt, makes them inherently sensitive to economic downturns and rising interest rates. If the economy slows significantly, or if interest rates rise dramatically when they need to refinance that debt, their debt service costs could become a much heavier burden. Those securitized debt agreements also contain restrictive covenants, specific clauses that could limit their operational and financial flexibility if certain performance metrics aren't met. That could potentially force them to alter their capital allocation strategies. It's a finely tuned but aggressively leveraged financial machine that requires constant vigilance and strong performance to manage effectively.
So given all these powerful forces at play, the strategic pivots, the financial engine, the headwinds to navigate, what are the key metrics you, as an informed listener, should probably monitor closely to track Domino's performance and gauge its future trajectory?
Okay, a few key things to watch. First, same-store sales growth, both U.S. and international. It's crucial to try and disaggregate this, track delivery versus carryout segments as they have different margin profiles and reveal shifts in customer behavior. Second, global net store growth, specifically the pace of new openings, particularly internationally, as this signals future revenue potential. Third, franchisee profitability. Look for metrics like average EBITDA per store. This is a leading indicator of the entire system's health. Happy, profitable franchisees are more likely to expand. Fourth, digital sales mix and, now, aggregator sales mix. You want to track the overall percentage of digital sales and, crucially, see how Uber Eats' contribution evolves against their initial 3% goal and if other aggregators get added to the mix.
Right, that aggregator piece is key now. Fifth.
Fifth, keep a very close eye on margin trends, particularly for the supply chain and company stores. This shows how effectively they're managing commodity and labor inflation, which directly impacts profitability. Sixth, their capital structure, specifically that leverage ratio, total debt to EBITDA. This tells you about their financial risk profile and how aggressive their balance sheet remains. Seventh, free cash flow generation and conversion. This is really the ultimate measure of the business's ability to service that debt, invest in growth, and return capital to shareholders. And finally, market share trends. Not just within QSR pizza, but critically, against the broader food delivery landscape. Are they maintaining or gaining share of stomach against these newer competitive threats?
So what does all of this really mean for you, the informed listener? We've seen how Domino's built this incredible business, leveraging its unique capital-light franchise model, its powerful vertically integrated supply chain. We've also explored how they're strategically adapting to a rapidly changing competitive landscape, carefully balancing their traditional strengths and the benefits of their direct-to-consumer model with these bold new partnerships with aggregators. It's a truly complex and dynamic story playing out.
Yeah, and the long-term success of Domino's, I think, will ultimately hinge on their ability to master this delicate art of coexistence. How do you leverage third-party aggregators for incremental growth and customer acquisition without cannibalizing your high-margin direct business and, maybe more critically, without ceding that invaluable direct customer relationship that has been a cornerstone of their competitive advantage for decades? It's a real tightrope walk between capturing new demand and protecting their core. How do you think they'll manage that tension going forward?
That's a lot to mull over, definitely. A truly thought-provoking challenge for a global leader like Domino's. We hope this deep dive gave you a truly comprehensive look into the powerful yet complex engine that is Domino's Pizza. Keep exploring, keep questioning, and thanks for taking this deep dive with us today.